We're doing the Yaakov and Brachot. We're up to page 212, second wide line. Amar Rabbi Yavu amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe. Rabbi Yavu says, God said to Moshe, Achshav yomru harav bekas v'talmid bekas. If you leave your tent outside the Jewish camp, so people will say, God's upset at us since the golden calf, and even Moshe's upset at us. He's left his tent outside our camp. So the Rebbe is upset at us, and his students upset at us. Yisrael mateyalim. So what's going to be with the Jewish people? If I'm upset and you're upset, so they're all alone. Im ata machzir olim komo mutav. If you bring your tent back within their camp, fine. Ve'im lav, and if you don't, Yoshua bin Nun talmidcha mesharet tachtecha. So then you should know your student Yoshua bin Nun has taken over. Wow. These midrashim always blow me away when God tells Moshe you're not indispensable. There are other midrashim like that. We see when Moshe was en route to take the Jews out of Egypt. So the snake comes and swallows him up and he's almost dead. And then Zipporah circumcises the child. But you see, God was telling him, you're not indispensable. V'hainu d'chtiv v'shav l'machane. And that's what it says, Moshe brought it back to the camp and Yoshua was constantly by his tent. Rava says, nonetheless, once Hashem said that Yoshua would be a constant in the tent, it wasn't annulled. You see, Yoshua became a constant in Moshe's tent. He was the constant student. Originally, he wasn't. He was a student, but he wasn't in the tent. And God said, if you don't bring your tent back, I'm going to have Yeshua in the tent. Okay, God said Yeshua is going to be in the tent. So once Hashem says something for good, even if it's on condition, we have a tradition that even if the condition is not fulfilled, God keeps the good part of it. There are other examples of that. We saw earlier in the Masechet, where God said to Moshe, I'll destroy the Jewish people and make you into a great nation in their stead. So then Moshe prays on behalf of the Jewish people and they're not destroyed. But Moshe did become a great nation. We have a tradition that Moshe had over 600,000 children by the time Chronicles was written. Where are they? I don't know. So from heaven they give good and they give good and they give more good. So Yoshua got the blessing end of it and Moshe goes back to the camp. There's an important concept here about taming anger. Parents have to apply this too. Parents have to agree that if one is coming hard on a kid, so then the other one is going to be softer and warmer and show more understanding. There's a duo, there's a partnership, and parents have to use that. If one parent is upset, so the other parent has to be softer and warmer to the kid and explain to the kid, you know, your mother was upset because you did A or B or C, maybe she'd go and apologize, you know. There are ways of helping the kid get it right by working together. So, very often, parents will consult with one another. Who's the one that should get upset at him? Right, good cop, bad cop, yeah. Ve'od patach Rav Yehuda b'chvot Torah v'darash. Rav Yehuda, remember, he was the first one to give the speech in Kerem B'Yavne, and he's going to continue after speaking about their hosts. Now he's going to speak about the honor of Torah. Now, there's a commentary here on the Ein Yaakov called the Rif. Now, that's not the regular RIF. That's an acronym for, I don't remember. RIF. Here we go. Doesn't tell us here who it is. I don't know who it is. One of the commentaries over here, Rav Yeshayo ben Yosef Pinto. So that's the RIF over here. So he says that when the rabbis convened in Kerem B'Yavne, this was their first opportunity to get together and learn Torah after a long period that they had to go in hiding, that the Romans were persecuting them and prohibiting Torah learning. When the Talmud describes the rabbis gathering in Kerem B'Yavne, what the Talmud is really saying, This is when the rabbis had a chance to convene in spite of the Roman decrees. And we mentioned last time, I said, it might be that because this was during the Roman period, they used a code and they described it as the vineyard in Yavne. Remember, I suggested that, but I couldn't find the source for it. So this afternoon I found that Rav Pinto says he takes it for granted that that's what's going on here. I'm not sure if that works with Rashi. Rashi gives another explanation that it was called a vineyard because their seats were in rows like a vineyard. But that seems to make sense. I mean, it was that generation and there was terrible persecution. We know the story of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. So when the rabbis convened in Keren B'Yavne, Rabbi Yehuda is going to give a speech about the honor of Torah V'Darash. He said the following speech. It says on the verse, Hasket u'shma Yisrael ayom hazeh niyet le'am. Focus, listen Israel, today you became a nation. So the Talmud asks, what does that mean? It's the end of the 40 years. What does it mean today you became a nation? V'chiyoto ayom nitena Torah li'Yisrael, where they give them the Torah on that day. V'aloto yom sof arbim shanaya. That was at the end of the 40 years. So the question here is, what does the Talmud mean? The Talmud seemed to have understood from the verse, listen closely to the Torah, for you are, today you became a nation through the Torah. And this is that tremendous concept that the Jewish people retained their status as a nation, as a people, across the lands, throughout the diaspora. And the Talmud seems to take that for granted. The Talmud says, was the Torah given that day? What does that mean, today you became a nation? The Talmud seems to understand that it's synonymous. You're becoming a nation is when you receive the Torah. We would have said, maybe they became a nation when they left Egypt. They left Goy Mikerev Goy. God took out one nation from within the other. Until they left Egypt, they were Egyptians. They were Egyptian slaves, but they were Egyptians. And then when they left, now you have a nation, the people of Israel. That's why the Torah stresses that they had a flag. Uvnei Yisrael yotzeim biyad ramah. They walked out with a flag. They walked out like a nation. So that's what we would have said. But no, the Talmud assumes that they became a nation when they received the Torah. So what does the verse mean? Today you became a nation. Ela lelamedcha, but the verse is coming to teach you. Shechaviva Torah alomedea bechol yom vayom ki yom shenitena mehar Sinai. That the Torah is precious by those who learn Torah every single day, just as if it was new, as if it was something that was just given to them at Sinai. So that's a concept which is actually expressed in the Shema, right? Asher Anochi Mitzavecha Hayom. Chazal say, what does it mean that I'm commanding you today? God isn't telling us the Torah today. So our sages said, yeah, every day you have to treat it as though it's a new thing. So first of all, that's an attitude. It's an interesting attitude that we can adopt in many things in life. The Torah says it about two things. It says it about learning Torah and about the land of Israel. Those are two things that a person can get tired of. Learning Torah and the land of Israel. You can get tired of it. Yeah, you make Aliyah in the beginning, you're all idealistic, everything's great. Look at the fruit, look at the people, look at the land, everything's beautiful. And then you land, and after a few months, you start seeing all the problems. This isn't what I thought I was coming to. Maltov cocktails. It's not what I was expecting. And Torah is the same way. You start learning Torah, you're all excited. You come to Machon Meir, the first month, second month, you're on a high. And then after the third month, the honeymoon's over. Now you got to just keep working, and it's not as exciting as it used to be. So that's true for everyone. Torah tells us every day, those who learn Torah, they are so fond of it. It's a new experience. Every day is a new excitement. So that's also an attitude. A person can develop that attitude. It's not only the way the Western world trains us. The Western world trains us to be responsive beings. This excites me. This makes me happy. This gets on my nerves. The Western world repeatedly trains us to this idea that other things are defining for me what I am. It's not I am happy, it's that makes me happy, that makes me sad, that I'm constantly being influenced. And we in Torah, we say you have to start from within. It says don't covet, and serve Hashem with happiness. We have to arouse our own feelings, take control of our feelings. So with regards to Torah, it's the same way. And by the way, same way in marriage too. you could wake up and say, oh boy, I'm still married to her. Or you could get up and get excited. Now, it takes a certain thought. I find one of the things I try to do is say modani with excitement. Very often when I get up, the one thing I want to say is, let me sleep. If I could force myself to get out that modani with excitement, modani, wow, I've been granted another day, so then you start your day on the right foot. Same thing with matovu. What are you saying when you come to shul? There's an excitement. I'm lucky to be coming here. And those of you who come from chutz arts, you know what I'm talking about. You didn't always have that ability to go to shul. You finally come here, okay, so there's an excitement. I often mention that the first 2-3 years I was here, I would look out the window incredulously. I couldn't believe I was here. I'm looking at Jerusalem. I'm seeing Jewish children talking Hebrew. I told you guys, I used to turn on the radio and turn it off just because it was like a miracle to me to hear Hebrew. Turn it on and hear Hebrew, turn it off. And turn it on again, and they're still talking Hebrew. It's like, wow. Okay, so there's an excitement in the beginning. And when it comes to Torah, we're supposed to retain that excitement. So Haskit, Hashem says, today you became a nation. Today you received the Torah. Every day has to have that excitement. It's a new thing we got. Haskit, asu kitot, kitot. Oh, I skipped, I'm sorry. Amar bitanchum reid rabichia ish kvarako. Teida, sha'arei adam kore kriyat shema shachit varvit verv echad eino kore, dome kemi shelo kara kriyat shema meolam. Person reads Shema every night, every morning. Then one night he didn't read it. What does he feel like? Oh, I can't believe it. I never read Kriya Shema. It feels like a total bump. Because we feel every day, if I say it every day, it's a new declaration every day. I'm connected every day. A guy goes to bed and suddenly he realizes he's lying there in bed. And I didn't say Shema tonight. Also tonight, I don't believe God's one. Sure, I believe God's one. But he feels terrible with himself, like as though he never said it, as though he never accepted the yoke of heaven on himself. A person knows he missed Shema one morning. He missed Tefillin one day. So he kicks himself. So that shows us the inverse, that when I do put it on, so every day is like a new acceptance. It's a new connection. Yes, I accept Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hasket. Why does it say hasket? So the word hasket could also mean like the word kitut. Hasket. Ket, if the root is the chaf tav, so it means cut yourself up. So what does that mean? Asu kitot kitot v'isku b'torah. Make yourself into classes, make yourself into groups, and learn Torah. You want to acquire Torah? You got to do it in a group. You want to try to do it alone? It's not going to work. Like Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina taught, the verse says, "My dichtiv, cherv al abadim benualu, a sword on the badim." What are badim? So bad could mean a single plant that grows alone, a single branch. A sword against those who try to learn Torah all alone. They sit there working Torah, but they're working with their own mind over and over again. They're rehashing the same thing without talking to someone else. Not only don't they get what's right, they become more stupid out of their learning if they try to do it alone. And a person learning that way will ultimately sin. So that's another source for this idea that when a person learns Torah on his own, he's not going to get smarter, he's going to get stupider. He's going to keep thinking he's gotten it right, and he's going to develop a whole mountain out of nothing. He's not going to get it right. So the truth is that this concept changed once the Torah was written. On a true level, today that you have Art Scroll, today that you have the oral law written, and you have all these commentaries, technically a person may learn Torah on his own. But realistically, having been here for a number of years and seeing what happens when people start off on their own, people can build mountains that are tremendously wrong. A person can completely misunderstand concepts in Talmud, in Halacha. Like the story I always tell about the guy whose wife demanded a divorce. So the court says to her, what's wrong with him? And she said, well, he's crazy. What's crazy about him? Every Friday night, when it comes time to make kiddush, he dips his eyes into the glass of wine. Why? Because the halacha says, yiten ein of bekos shabracha. Put your eyes on the cup of blessing. It means, translated literally, that's what it says. What the halacha says is look at it, but the wording in Hebrew is put your eyes in the cup of blessing. So he opened up a Mishnah Brura and said, Rabbis, what do you want from me? It's what it says in halacha. Okay, there are many halachas like that, that if you're going to take literally what it says, so you could get very far in the wrong direction. So that's what I'm saying, even though technically, halachically, today, one may learn alone, because we do have the oral law written down, and we have commentaries and all that, but realistically, that doesn't work for a person when he's in the beginning of the tshuva process. A person has to first get a basis in a yeshiva or from a rabbi, and only much later on can he really develop on his own.